And then I'm going to close with a section from my new novel, and I'll describe the novel for 30 seconds or less and then go right into the section. My novel's about a woman named Irina, who is a Polish refugee living in Chicago, taking care of an elderly man who is a former jazz musician, a black man who is a former jazz musician. She lives in a high-rise where her closest friend is an American woman who's kind of sleazy, who's taking care of an ex-Chicago kind of gangster person who's now in real estate, and they all become friends, and eventually they all go to Poland and have an adventure. Anyway, this chapter, though, involves the Polish cast of my international novel. It involves her ex-boyfriend and her mother, Irina's ex-boyfriend and mother, and the problem really is that her mother loves her more than her boyfriend. That's the issue here. And this particular scene that I'm going to read has to do with the boyfriend getting rid of her cat, trying to bring it to his mother and her mother, and the problems that befall this adventure. So let me just take a sip of water and we'll do it. Okay. Only Irina leaves Poland for political reasons after the communists have resigned, Joseph is telling himself. Only Irina leaves me like this, he says, kicking a bedroom slipper aside, one of the pair she gave him last Christmas. It lands near a pile of old journals. Sentences about Irina have been his lament since her departure in March. Only Irina leaves me these problems, this life, this damned cat. How does the cat sense that Joseph is trying to capture him? Kitty, kitty, he croons, stooping to look under the bed, trying to lure Chopin out. Come here, you fucking cat, he says in a seductive whisper. When he catches Chopin, he'll place him in a pillowcase for the ride to Irina's mother's house near Lazienki Park. She has agreed hesitantly to take the cat, which Joseph constantly forgets to feed, which shits and pees on his two good bath towels, which startles him at night with its iridescent eyes steady as paperweights. If it were larger, it would eat him, he has begun to imagine, as the cat wakes him with sudden movements and stares grudgingly at Joseph in the morning until he is fed. Sometimes he is more stealthy. He creeps onto sleepy Joseph's chest and massages him with its paws. What can you be thinking? My tits are dry. I'm not your mother, he shouts intermittently. But do cats understand? Their brains, the size of walnuts or acorns, perhaps, know very little. Maybe Irina's mother will let him roam as cats should, hunting for birds, filling his mouth with blue and brown feathers and entrails and rodent ears, taking care of himself. Try to tame a cat. But on this busy residential street with its cafes and pastry stores, a cat can hardly survive. What was Irina thinking to bring a cat here? What would it eat, a Napoleon? Maybe he should send the animal to his brother in the country, but then he would have to phone his brother, to whom he rarely speaks, and sell him on the idea of this bothersome pet. No, he would not wish this cat even on his brother. It seems that Irina should have to keep this nuisance by some divine law, but cats don't emigrate. It seems that she, who found Chopin as an infant crying in a rainy park, should have had to stuff him in her suitcase. Be that as it may, Irina's mother, bearing proper responsibility for her reckless daughter, has agreed to inherit this dreadful shedding, peeing, shitting legacy. To lure the cat from under the bed, Joseph has placed some slivers of chicken directly onto the floor. This is how he feeds the cat whenever he remembers. Improvised islands of food spring up momentarily, but Chopin is ravenous. Joseph could be a food cartographer designing such a map 24 hours a day. And when he buys himself milk, which he does now and then for his putrid coffee, he leaves some for Chopin. But this ungrateful cat is not fond of milk. He probably misses the chicken livers that Irina lovingly cooked for him in butter when it was available. Saucers of yellowing solid milk decorate the maroon birds of paradise and graying flowers of the oriental rug that Irina has left behind. Staring at the cat, who seated on the bed now looks past him with foolish disinterest, Joseph's anger grows at Irina. She has left too much for him to tidy up. Like a child with a messy room, Irina has gone out in the world to play, and left him with the debris. And who's to find the time for her cat and her pot of rotting ivy and her letters, this constant flow of sad and hopeful letters and postcards, which he supposes he's to answer cheerfully? How can he appreciate Irina's postcard of the tall, ugly, rusting Picasso statue resembling an Afghan hound when each day has been a slow, hellish dream since Lot Flight 422 took off and deposited Irina in Italy, then New York, then Chicago, then a high-rise with an old black man? He has so much to do with her gone, shopping, laundry, haphazard cleaning, how to whiten his aging underwear or find the right coffee, the one with hazelnuts that she made every morning they were together, how to complete the patternless crossword puzzle on Sunday. He can barely keep up with his academic journals and students and scholarly work. This cat nearly pushes him over the brink. No one ever suggested to him that losing a girlfriend is so much like losing the part of your mind which you usually forget exists, the part that keeps phone numbers and bus routes in order and makes shopping lists and holds infinitesimal instructions for useless, annoying objects he now must master. What good is a clock radio that doesn't wake him? He might as well throw it out the window. He now has captured the mewling, foul cat and pushed it into the pillowcase. It's dug its nails into him twice and snagged yet another good sweater. He can feel its bones and muscles and claws working inside the bag to escape. Do cats have natural fears of pillowcases, of drowning? He remembers hearing that baby apes are afraid of snakes from birth. Chopin is now pushing his hard little doorknob head toward the top of the bag. He is about to spill over like lava. Joseph tightens his grip and fights off the notion to peer inside and give the cat a spiteful, victorious look. You are going to live with Irina's mother, he tells the straining muscular lump. With grandma who will feed you, maybe, he laughs. You deserve this, he says, releasing his bottom hand that supports the bag and swinging it slightly recklessly by the top. And with his free hand reaching under the bed where he has found many pieces of memorabilia since Irina departed, he locates yet another souvenir, a loose velvet hair ribbon, and ties the bag shut. Okay, now what happens is he goes on the bus and he loses the cat. Someone takes it while he's asleep. So then, 2 days later, he finally gets to Irina's mother's house. He's so embarrassed he doesn't go that day. And I'll read you what happens when he gets there, and that will end the reading. How can it be, Mrs. Bozinska is asking her daughter's friend, how can you lose a cat on a bus? Tousled, red-faced, poor Joseph is standing at her door with his hands in his pockets like a child. He is 2 days late and has arrived with nothing to say, no excuses to offer. And then you didn't call, she says with a sneer distorting her plump cheeks. I wait and wait that day. I am worried sick about you. But I called that night, and you didn't have the heart to tell me. It was too foolish. I felt humiliated that it happened. And what shall we tell Irina? I don't know, Mrs. Bozinska. She makes an angry face. Why does it seem to annoy her that he calls her Mrs. Bozinska? After all, that is her name, Lena Bozinska, wife of the late Professor Bozinski, mother of Irina, future owner of the lost cat. And why, Joseph, why didn't you watch, she asks, wringing her hands dramatically. He is not a child. Is he supposed to stand in her chilly doorway with the yellowed photographs all day and take this abuse? Soon he will fall asleep on his feet, lulled by the chiding rhythms of her voice. The whole situation is so ridiculous. He who knows the square root of negative numbers having to stand here endlessly being harangued. Who would think that a pillowcase would get stolen? Who would know that one must watch pillowcases like a hawk? Well, come in, she nods abjectly and turns her squat frame away from him. He sees the uneven hem of her old flowered house dress and her floppy, worn-out slippers. Her ankles are swollen and her hair is in a tight gray bun. He proceeds to her old gold sofa, which probably predates Irina, and sits erectly at one edge, keeping his distance from the decorative pillows and doilies and embroidery that is tossed haphazardly over the edge and spills onto the dark carpeted floor. No wonder Irina is so untidy. Look at the example her mother has set. Mrs. Bozinska, call me Lena, she says. Lena, here are some pastries. She points to a rose-covered china plate already on the table. Please eat. Lena, he repeats, filling his mouth with a buttery raspberry cookie. I do not know what we should tell Irina. We, she asks, eyes large with contempt. We did not lose the little thing. You have a problem, Joseph, not we. I was thinking, Joseph continues, in the way of philosophers, linguists, semioticians, people who ignore the evidence of the world for the evidence of their own minds, that we could simply keep the myth alive. How is little Chopin, Irina will ask, and we, I, or him, he clears his throat nervously, will offer various reports. Chopin is well. He is happy at his new home. He chases birds regularly. He eats heartily. He sleeps bundled at your mother's feet at night. I think he is content. Then several months from now, I can report that Chopin is gone. He went out at night and didn't return in the morning. Perhaps he chased a female cat. I saw a little tabby near your mother's house to the other side of the park and got lost. It is very tragic. Then we must find him, Lena responds. Her voice is assured, lacking irony. We must find Irina's beloved cat. Joseph is puzzled. Is Irina's mother not understanding? How can we do this when this is a story, he asks. How can we make Irina worry so, she asks, raising her voice. Don't you see, Joseph, this all leads to the same conclusion. Poor Irina, no cat. Then we say, Joseph suggests, stuffing another apricot morsel in his mouth and slurring his speech with tea, that the cat is still fine. It is spring now. It sits in the sun and looks happy as a king. It chases a bird now and then and sometimes succeeds. We hate to see the results, so many feathers, but what a full round stomach he has. And after all, he is only a cat. Then you must bring me Chopin, she says. He regards her broad forehead for a moment, her small blue eyes, her hard little mouth buttoned in defiance or stupidity. But how can I? You can, Joseph. You can bring me a new Chopin. An imposter? A replica. But Irina will know. How will she know? Will we tell her? They exchange cautious smiles. Joseph snorts a thin laugh out of his nose, and Lena actually giggles. Should they shake hands, he wonders, sign contracts, mingle blood to seal their treachery? I need a real cat, Joseph. I am not a fiction writer. I must know what this cat does day to day. I must be able to tell Irina he eats so delicately. He sleeps on the green pillow near the window bench in the afternoon sun. He seems to like the painting of Father in the hallway. The pink rug in the lavatory is accumulating his fur. I must wash it. But what if Irina says, this is not what my Chopin does, Joseph says. How will she know? Has the cat ever stayed here? Can she predict all of its actions? Really, Joseph, for a mathematician, I'm sorry to say that you lack imagination. And where should I procure such a cat? Where did you procure Chopin? Irina found him in the park. He was a little wet thing. Then I would suggest that you wait for a heavy rain, Irina laughs. Lena laughs. Or that you look at a shop or ask friends at the university. But remember, it must resemble Chopin, black and white, correct? But why is that necessary, Lena? Can I say to my only daughter, my dear only child, your cat's lovely gray fur heats up in the sun, your cat's round blue eyes, green, Joseph mutters, your cat's round green eyes grow small with pleasure when I stroke his black belly, white belly. White belly, if I can't see the cat, I must have the cat in front of my eyes. Remember, Joseph, you didn't want the cat that our Irina left you. You brought it to me, and what happened? She serves up a spiteful look. Now you must find me a cat just like him. And her voice explodes in indignation. And you bring him to me. You are an intelligent man, Joseph, and the world is full of cats. On the streets I see yellow cats, gray cats, cats with one ear and no tail, cats with kittens, squash cats on the boulevard. You find me this Chopin. You bring him here by next week. And don't breathe a word to Irina about what's happened. If you dare tell her, Joseph, if you write and say, Irina, my lovely Irina, I have misplaced little Chopin, who I was trying to dump at your mother's, who was too much trouble for an important man like myself, I will never forgive you. And she looks thoughtful, wipes some crumbs from her bodice, and continues, Irina will tell me, Joseph, don't think that she won't. And if you do this, if you confess, I will come to the university every day. I have so little to do these days, a lonely widow, and I will remind you of how you were so careless. I will remind you in front of your colleagues. Thank God my Irina never had children with you. I'd be missing several grandchildren by now. Oh, I left one on the bus, Nani Lena. I just fell asleep for an hour and she was gone. Oh, I just had one at the zoo near the lion cage, but somehow he disappeared. A whole generation lost. How can it be, Joseph? And for a minute he doesn't know if she is about to laugh or cry. But instead she takes the best pastry left, a large slab of white powdery substance, and pops it into her mouth. A frenzy of dainty chewing follows in silence. So by next Sunday, a cat, he promises. Chopin. A replica of Chopin delivered here. No excuses. Well, I must be going, he is saying. Wait, Lena heads toward the kitchen. After what seems like many minutes, she returns. She is carrying a variety of objects in an old military green cardboard box with funny stiff handles. Joseph sees his favorite hazelnut coffee. Where do they find it? A small ham, a box of imported British cookies, some fruit preserves. Yes, he is delirious with pleasure, and a mottled red rubber hot water bottle. Fill the... putting it under the other provisions. Maybe he'll find a taxi back home. Maybe that's the one lesson of this whole ordeal. No matter the chaos at the taxi stand, always key up. All right, he says again, and takes Lena's hand and kisses her on either cheek. By next Sunday, she says in parting. And now Joseph is back on the street in the suddenly frigid late October evening. The swirling sky looks full of trouble, and he wonders if he'll ever locate his muffler and winter cap, which have disappeared since Irina departed. It would be too convenient if that thing he sees in the shadows of the bushes adjacent to Lena's house were a cat resembling Chopin. Some kind of rodent, he says, and without observing it further, begins his long, cold trek to the taxi stand on the other side of the park. Thank you.